data shows that the strategy is not being as effective as quickly as we would like, then we may have to go to new rules.
Coronavirus Down Under goes over a new record. It's Monday, July 20th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're glad to have you with us. Join us as well at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, a U.S. civil rights leader is remembered. How a new White House commander-in-chief might approach defense. Afghan women face new challenges. Back to school without going back. The world on your wrist. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The Australian state of Victoria has reported a record daily number of new coronavirus cases, 428. The city of Melbourne remains in a strict lockdown imposed after a renewed surge in COVID-19 infections. Authorities warn that the pandemic is far from over. Neighboring New South Wales is also reintroducing some disease controls and has now banned singing and dancing at weddings, as well as limiting numbers in bars and cafes. We hear more from Phil Mercer in Sydney, as so far, Australia has recorded almost 11,000 confirmed coronavirus cases. 113 people have died.
The new outbreak in Melbourne, a city of 5 million people, has derailed Australia's earlier success in tackling the virus. Hundreds of infections are being reported each day. There were 428 Friday, a daily record since the pandemic began, and 217 Saturday. Most cases have been detected within areas under lockdown, including clusters at schools and care homes for the aged. Victoria State's Chief Health Officer is Professor Brett Sutton.
Tragically, there'll be several who will require intensive care support and a number of people will die. It does reflect behaviours and mobility from 10 or more days ago. And so, of course, there's a hope that these numbers stabilise in the coming days.
If that doesn't happen, Victoria State Premier Daniel Andrews says even tougher lockdown measures could be brought in.
The data shows that the strategy is not being as effective as quickly as we would like, then we may have to go to new rules. The rules are to protect you. The rules are to serve all of us.
The new wave of infections is blamed on security breaches in the hotel quarantine system for travellers returning to Australia and large family gatherings where distancing and hygiene protocols were ignored. Hundreds of cases have been detected at apartment blocks in the poorest parts of Melbourne, where some residents complain they've been treated like criminals. As the crisis continues, travel between Victoria and other parts of Australia is being heavily restricted and strict border controls put in place. The next session of federal parliament is likely to be cancelled because of the pandemic. Lawmakers were scheduled to return to Canberra in August. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Thousands of protesters in Thailand rally against government. Virus is emerging in new hotspots as India races past 1 million mark. Pakistan's Hindus call to resume work on temple protested by Islamic hardliners. Stranded on ships, 200,000 seafarers in virus limbo. Myanmar holds muted Martyrs' Day tribute to fallen independence heroes. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories, and there's so much more when you go to Facebook at VOA Asia and stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson. Longtime U.S. Congressman John Lewis, a champion of civil rights for African Americans, has died. Lewis was 80 years old, and he died after a year-long battle with pancreatic cancer. VOA's Chris Simpkins has more on the life of a very extraordinary man.
We cannot give up now.
No, no.
We cannot give in.
No.
A leader of the modern-day American civil rights movement, John Lewis worked closely with the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and was the last surviving keynote speaker from the 1963 March on Washington.
We shall splinter the segregated South into 1,000 pieces and put them together in the image of God and democracy. We must say, wake up, America, wake up!
Lewis gained national recognition 2 years later, when he, along with other voting rights demonstrators, were beaten by police in Selma, Alabama. The 1965 incident, known as Bloody Sunday, triggered a national awakening to end racial discrimination.
We were beaten, we were tear gassed. I thought I was going to die on this bridge.
Months after the violence, Lewis stood next to President Lyndon Johnson when the landmark 1965 Voting Rights Act was signed into law. It was a crowning moment for Lewis as the legislation outlawed discriminatory voting practices that kept African Americans from gaining political power.
The Act of 1965 freed and liberated so many people.
In 1986, Lewis began his own political career after being elected to the U.S. House of Representatives from Georgia. Called the conscience of the Congress, Lewis fought against income inequality and for criminal justice reform and gun safety.
We cannot continue to stick our heads in the sand and ignore the reality of mass gun violence in our nation.
In 2011, President Barack Obama awarded Lewis the Medal of Freedom, the nation's highest civilian honor. Right before New Year's Day, 2020, the veteran congressman announced he had stage 4 pancreatic cancer. While under cancer treatment, he returned to his native Alabama to commemorate the 55th anniversary of the Bloody Sunday March, refusing to let his grave condition hold him back.
I'm not going to give up. No. I'm not going to give in. No. I'm going to continue to fight. We need your prayers now more than ever before. Let's do it. We can do it. Selma is a different place.
Chris Simpkins, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, about 2,500 demonstrators gathered around Bangkok's iconic democracy monument in the old part of the city, defying the ban on public gatherings to demand amendments to the military written constitution, new parliamentary elections, and the end of repressive laws in the country. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's a brand new week. We're glad you're starting it out with us on VOA Asia. U.S. presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden has vowed to strengthen ties with NATO if elected in November, and he has warned that the post-World War II transatlantic alliance may not survive if President Donald Trump wins a second term. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain looks at Biden's record on the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, both as a senator and as a vice president.
Joe Biden is no stranger to the international stage and has long been a vocal supporter of NATO and other multinational alliances as a pillar of U.S. national security. He served as vice president under President Barack Obama from 2009 to 2017.
I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Biden previously served as a U.S. senator from the state of Delaware from 1973 to 2009. He was a longtime member of the powerful Foreign Relations Committee, serving twice as that panel's chairman.
But Europe cannot stay united without the United States.
He supported the U.S. and NATO intervention in Bosnia in 1994. During the 2016 presidential race, then-Republican candidate Donald Trump was sharply critical of NATO, and outgoing Vice President Biden sought to reassure allies in the Baltics that the U.S. would always defend them in case of attack.
I want to make it clear. I want to make it absolutely clear to all the people in the Baltic states. We have pledged our sacred honor of the United States of America, our sacred honor to the NATO Treaty and Article 5.
As president, Trump has repeatedly focused on the financial cost to the U.S. of supporting NATO, complaining that Germany and other NATO members are not doing their fair share by paying more than 2% of their gross domestic product for defense.
You know, the United States is the major participant in NATO. We pay more than anybody else by far, have for many, many years. So we defend Europe, but Europe also takes tremendous advantage of the United States on trade. Advantage like you wouldn't believe.
Analysts say Trump is the first U.S. president since Harry Truman to cast doubt on the value of security alliances to national security. Ivo Dalder is a former U.S. ambassador to NATO.
He has made it clear frequently that he not only thinks that Europeans aren't doing enough, but that the day may well come that the United States does not want to be a part of this organization as such. And that perspective has greatly damaged the alliance. It has led allies in Europe to say, can we really trust the United States?
Other analysts say that despite Trump's comments criticizing NATO, European allies, and praising Russia, his administration has continued to support NATO and, in some respects, has gone further than the Obama administration in standing up to Moscow by, for example, providing anti-Javelin tank missiles to Ukraine. Bradley Bowman, who advised Republican senators on foreign policy, says what he expects a Biden presidency would mean.
You would see continued emphasis on encouraging our European and NATO allies to make proper investments in defense, and not just how much you invest, but how you're investing it, you know, and are you adding real capability.
Stand with our allies. Know them by their first names.
Dalder and Bowman both say that from watching Biden up close,
next president of the United States,
they would expect a radically different tone towards NATO allies if he is elected. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. India has crossed the 1 million coronavirus infections milestone. Long confined to cities, COVID-19 is spreading in the Indian countryside and not expected to peak for weeks. You'll find this story on VOA 60 as well as VOA Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, coronavirus lockdowns have impacted millions around the world in different ways, economically, mentally, and emotionally. In Herat, Afghanistan, there are concerns about a possible rise of domestic violence. VOA's Khalil Nurzai reports from Herat.
Mandating stay-at-home orders may slow the spread of COVID-19, but it may be increasing domestic violence in Herat. Marzia Akbari, a psychologist, says some of the patients she treated pre-COVID have vanished and not come back.
We used to have one-on-one visits with women affected with violence in the hospital, but due to coronavirus, we lost contact. A number of women established communication through phone calls, but with some women, we even lost the option of calling them.
According to records in Herat province, the number of reported cases of violence decreased. However, the head of women's issues says there is a lag in reporting the cases.
We have recorded low numbers of cases among women in the past. We used to have about 10 cases, and now it is only 2 or 3 cases. The reason is the men are also staying at home, and they don't allow women to report violence.
Dr. Arif Jalali, head of local hospital in Herat, says during a month of home restrictions due to coronavirus, there have been about 100 suicide attempts and reports of violence, and most of them linked to Herat city.
People are scared to come to the hospital. We used to have a high number of patients. We had 700 beds, but now it is only 300. We received 20 cases of women being beaten, and we had some 75 women who attempted suicide, either intentionally or they were poisoned.
Many experts believe that the stay-at-home orders have increased tensions at home, that along with the economic stress of many businesses being closed are the main reasons behind increasing violence against women during quarantine days. For Khalil Nurzai in Herat, Afghanistan, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Coronavirus questions. Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you are sick or advised to by local authorities.
Now on VOA Asia, as the new academic year is approaching and schools in some U.S. states are preparing to reopen, parents and school systems are debating whether to send their children to school buildings and classrooms in the fall. School districts are also debating several options. Tatiana Voroshko has the story as she narrates reporting by Lisa Bakletz.
Fairfax County, Virginia is offering parents a choice between partial in-person and online and full-time online learning. Michelle and Jonah Goldschlag decided to homeschool their 9-year-old son and send their 11-year-old daughter to school for 2 days of in-person learning a week.
Main factor there was that she really draws a lot of energy from her classmates, and she's very, you know, she's very close with a lot of her classmates, and she really just, I think it would have crushed her to not be able to see any of them next year.
But this decision did not come easy to the Goldschlags.
The transition to online learning was difficult, and I would say that her voice was lost a bit in the digital classroom.
We don't have anybody who's at high risk in our household, so that was one factor. Our families don't live particularly close, so we don't see them tremendously frequently. So we think the precautions seem very reasonable in terms of limiting the number of students and wearing masks and the not having recess and all those other things that they're doing.
Mariam Arumlu, mother of two who lives in the same district as the Goldschlags, chose 4 days a week of online learning for her son. Her teenage daughter wants to go to school, which makes Arumlu anxious.
And I worry about what to do with my parents who are in their 70s and 80s. And similarly, I know there are other neighbors who have told me one is a doctor and she doesn't want to expose her patients to further risk. One has a husband who has a heart condition.
Teachers can also decide whatever they want to teach in person or online. At first, Inga Moran, who teaches French in a school in Arlington, was eager to go back to the classroom.
As I thought about it more and I read more of the data about what we know about COVID-19, I got really more nervous because I imagined going into the classroom and I imagined children not wearing the mask all the time, taking it off, and that I would have a chance of getting the disease. And then I thought about the other people in the building who might be at higher risk, the school bus drivers, the custodians.
Arlington School District has opted to go from part-time in-person to full-time online learning. Moran is convinced that the online learning experience would greatly improve this fall.
Every teacher I know is spending their free time in the summer planning and researching how to do this.
At the same time, some schools in Virginia are ready to open full-time. Schools that offer in-person learning are developing new procedures for children and staff, including mandatory masks, lunches in the classroom, and limiting contact games.
Our school divisions have to file two plans with the Department of Education, the State Department of Education. One plan is about health. How are you going to mitigate the risk of the coronavirus? How are you going to sanitize the learning environment? How are you going to practice social distancing for students and staff? The other plan is about instruction.
Similar preparations are going on all around the U.S. with school districts, administrations, schools, principals, teachers, and parents making their own choices. Some metropolitan areas like San Diego, Los Angeles, and Atlanta opted for full-time online learning. Tatiana Voroshko and Lesia Bakalets for VOA News, Fairfax, Virginia.
Now on VOA Asia, NASA plans to launch its newest Mars rover by the end of the month after a hardware issue scrapped an earlier launch. The space agency has until the middle of August to complete a successful launch before planetary alignment issues force a costly delay to the mission. VOA's Arash Arabisadi brings us This Week in Space.
Recently at Florida's Cape Canaveral, scientists and the mission crew tucked NASA's Perseverance rover inside the nose of the Mars 2020 spacecraft for a rescheduled launch. Project scientist Kenneth Farley.
There have been a number of technical issues getting the rocket together. Spacecraft is all ready to go, and as recently as a couple of days ago, the spacecraft was bolted on top of the rocket.
Scientists are now conducting final tests on the craft and its booster.
One of the hard things about launching rockets is you have to get everything packaged just right into the spacecraft. So the delay is not because of anything with the rover, but it's just a matter of packaging the rover within that rocket and making sure then that rocket is ready for launch.
NASA's Bethany Ellman says the agency remains upbeat about the mission's two-week window after issues with the rocket scrapped the original launch.
Typically what happens is the launch goes the first day if all conditions on the vehicle are green and the weather is good. The window is to allow for bad weather, for other things to happen, for contingency. So we're pretty optimistic that we're going to get off the ground.
But if it's not launched by mid-August, the mission will have to wait until Earth and Mars return to proper alignment in 2022. The delay alone could cost about $500 million. The U.S., China, and UAE are sending unmanned spacecraft to Mars beginning this week, continuing the search for signs of ancient life on the planet. In another development following recent appearances above Italy, France, and the United States, the comet C2020F3, known as NEOWISE, blazed a path over Northern Ireland. NASA calls it a natural firework, and NEOWISE should be visible after sunset until mid-August. Arash Arabisadi, VOA News, Washington.
It is commonly accepted that the human senses are limited. What can be seen through the eyes and heard through the ears. Sound is created when things vibrate, and we hear that through our ears. Researchers have developed a wearable device that augments the reality of users by allowing them to hear through their skin in the form of vibrations. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has details.
This wristband allows a wearer to hear through the skin. The device called Buzz by NeoSensory acts like an ear with the help of a microphone that picks up sounds, which then are translated into frequencies that are spread out on this wristband, says Stanford University neuroscientist David Eagleman.
It has motors on it, vibratory motors.
The wristband captures the different sounds in the environment and translates them into patterns of vibration. The motors vibrate along the band similar to the vibrations of a mobile phone.
Any of this stuff gets to the brain via the skin and the spinal cord, and then people can learn how to interpret it.
Just like the blind learning to read Braille, the deaf and hard of hearing can learn to hear with Buzz through different vibrations on the skin, like learning a language.
Because the brain makes associations between what you're seeing and what you're feeling, just like it would between your eyes and your ears.
According to NeoSensory, this wristband can also help those who can hear to better multitask, says NeoSensory product marketing manager Julie Taylor.
Wind conditions, if you're flying a drone and not able to look away, you're able to put all of that information in via the skin while the eyes are occupied elsewhere.
There is also an app for the device where the strength of the vibrations and frequency range can be adjusted so users can hear what they want to hear.
So we have a music mode that really helps fixate on tempo and rhythm. We have another algorithm that is designed for sleeping mode, which only delivers high-pitched, loud sounds such as an alarm. So you're not going to be woken up by somebody snoring.
The device's battery lasts about 24 hours, although it uses more battery power in a louder environment. Some users say hearing the world through their skin allows them to feel more connected and aware of their environment in ways they never could before. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
That's our program for today. We're glad you joined us on VOA Asia. You can find us on Facebook at VOA Asia, Twitter as well, and you can see us on Instagram and YouTube. And, of course, all of our full-length 25-minute programs are found at voanews.com. We thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Pulpyboom. I'm Jim Stevenson. Have a great day. Be safe. Be well.